Before we begin, I hope you'll take advantage of the opportunity and come back tonight. We're going to look at the sinner's prayer. Often this is described in the religious world. We're going to look at it from a spiritual aspect, and so that I hope that you'll be back tonight to take part of that. Ethan, can you tell me what kind of tree that came from? Do you know what that is? An apple. Comes from what kind of tree? Apple tree. Very good. Zach, what kind of tree does that come from? Banana tree. I didn't prep them ahead of time, so I caught them off guard. The reading this morning talks about the analogy between men and the fruit they bear, and trees. And we understand those. Everybody knows what kind of a tree that comes from. I don't know where it was grown. I don't know, I don't even know the brand, but it's a banana. And it came from a banana tree. Today we're going to look at a short letter, John's third letter. And in that letter, he looks at three different men and talks about those men by the kind of fruit they bear. And that's what we're going to look at this morning as we look at these men and think about ourselves. We also bear fruit, and people can tell about us by the fruit that we bear. The letter is a very short personal letter that John writes to an individual named Gaius, someone that he knows well and respects. And he says in verse 13 and 14, he says, I have many things to write to you, but I'm not willing to write them to you with pen and ink, but hope to see you shortly and we will speak face to face. So there are a lot of things that John wanted to speak with Gaius, but he said, this is not the place to do that. I want to come and I want to talk to you face to face about these. There are certain times when we can write a note to someone or write a short letter to someone and express some information. But when we really want to sit down and have a serious heart-to-heart discussion, we do that face to face. Perhaps so that they can understand our real feelings and we can understand their reaction to that. But there are things here that John says are just not, I just don't want to put those to paper. I want to come and talk to you. But there are some things that I want to talk to you about. And so we're going to look at these three men in 3 John. The first one is Gaius. And he shares with him a threefold commendation. In verses 2 through 8, he says, Beloved, I pray that in all respects you may prosper and be in good health, just as your soul prospers. For I was very glad when brethren came and testified to your truth. That is how you are walking in truth. I have no greater joy than this, to hear of my children walking in the truth. And beloved, you are acting faithfully in whatever you accomplish for the brethren, and especially when they are strangers. And they have testified to your love before the church. And you will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. For they went out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. Therefore, we ought to support such men so that we may be fellow workers with them with the truth. He starts out by saying that Gaius, he prays that his well-being and his physical health will mirror that of his spiritual health. How would you stand financially and physically if those measures were stood up against your spiritual health? I believe there are probably many Christians who would be bedridden paupers if their physical and financial health mirrored their spiritual health. And Paul here speaks to Gaius, and he says, I know the kind of man he is, because of his spiritual health. And it shows. It shows in other things. It shows in the fruit that he produces. He mentions the fact that he walked in the truth. His life reflected the life of Jesus. John writes in his earlier letters about walking in light and walking in darkness, and that as disciples of Christ, we walk in the light. Now that doesn't mean we don't stumble, we don't make mistakes. I stumbled inside the building Friday 3 or 4 times, and all the lights were on, it was daylight. I just didn't pick up my feet and stumbled. And I corrected that, and so I watch for that, and I pick up my feet, and I see where I'm going. And as Christians, we do that. We are walking in the light, but sometimes we make mistakes, and we recognize that, and we change our course. But if we're walking in the darkness, we're going to run into things all the time. You're just going to be out there feeling because you don't know where you're going. John says Gaius is walking in the light. He's walking where he should be. He's following in the example of Jesus. And then he mentions that part of that shows up in the fact that he's hospitable and that he's generous. There were men coming and going around to different groups of Christians and preaching and bringing them the good news and teaching them things. And some of those men were unfamiliar with the groups. We had two men here last month that we've supported for some time, but some of you had never met them before. You didn't know who they were. They're preachers of the gospel. There were men like that in Gaius's day, and Gaius welcomed them and helped them with the things that they needed, supported them, welcomed them into his home, and sent them on the way with the things that they needed. And John knew about those things. He says, I know the kind of man Gaius is, because I see the work that he does. And I see the fruit of his life and what's going on. If John were to write to someone about you, what would he say about your works? He understood the teachings from Matthew 25, and Jesus is talking about the judgment, and he said, if you've helped this person, you've helped me. The story of the Good Samaritan, this man is going along and he sees an individual who needs some help and offers his help. That's the type of person Gaius was. Is that the type of people we are? Are we spiritually prosperous? Does our spiritual life abound in fruit? Is it overflowing? Evidently the Pickering's apple trees were abundant this year as they put up a sign inviting people to please come out and pick apples and make some apple cider because we have more than we can deal with. That's what Gaius's produce was like. It was abundant. It was overflowing. And then he speaks of a man named Diotrephes. And of Diotrephes, he gives a threefold indictment. Verses 9 through 11, he said, I wrote something to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first among them or have the preeminence, does not accept what we say. For this reason, when I come, I will call attention to his deeds, which he does, unjustly accusing us with wicked words, and not satisfied with this, he himself does not receive the brethren, either he forbids those who desire to do so and puts them out of the church. Beloved, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. And the one who does good is of God, and the one who does evil has not seen God. He's giving a description here of this man, Diotrephes, and speaks about the fact that he wants to be first. And he wants people to notice who he is. And he wants the accolades of everyone. I thought of a couple of examples to go along with this. In Numbers chapter 16, we have the story of three men, Korah and Dathan and Abiram. And they were prominent men among the children of God. They were in the priesthood. They held very prominent positions and were over others and were men that were recognized among the group, but it wasn't enough. In verses 8 and 10, Moses says to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi, is it not enough for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the rest of the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself and do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to minister to them?" He says, look at what God has given you to do. And yet it wasn't enough. They would accuse Moses and say, "You know, Moses, we're all children of God. We're all holy. Who put you in charge? Why can't we be in charge?" They wanted the preeminence. It reminds me also of when Jesus first came to minister. You had the scribes and the Pharisees that Jesus called out oftentimes, and the scribes were the lawyers. They were the ones who understood the law of Moses and the prophets. They were the teachers. They were the instructors. They were the professors and the ones who guided the people and told them what to do. And then this Jesus comes along and steals their thunder. They were probably lucky to fill up half of a synagogue to have people come and listen to them. Jesus had Lucas Oil Stadium crowds. They couldn't get in the buildings. He had to teach out in the mountains and on the seaside because there were so many thousands of people that came to hear Jesus. And they couldn't handle the fact that this Galilean comes and is teaching. And it bothers them. They not only love the preeminence, but when they couldn't get it, they would slander the righteous. It reminds me a lot of our way of life in the political arena. If a man doesn't have anything to show what he can do to improve things, he goes and finds all the faults of his opponent and brings that out. "I'll show you how bad this guy is." And that's what they would do. In verses 3 and 13, back in number 16, Korah says to Moses, he says, "You've gone far enough, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is in their midst. Why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" And in verse 13, he says, "Is it not enough that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey to have us die in the wilderness? Would you also lord it over us?" Moses didn't put himself in that position. God did. And he didn't bring him out of a land of milk and honey. He brought him out of a land of captivity. But they slander Moses and try to bring up things against him that are not false to make themselves look better. The scribes and Pharisees would look at Jesus and say, "We're sons of Abraham. His birth we're not even sure about. And he's from a backwoods town in Galilee. He's a glutton. He parties with the sinners. This is the kind of guy you want to listen to?" That's what Diotrephes did. He wanted to be first. And so when someone challenges that, when one of these men or even John comes and presents information to the congregation, Diotrephes puts them out. He says, "We're not going to have that. And you're out of here." And that's what the scribes would do. That's what Korah and Dathan and Abiram would do. And then, on top of that, we're going to sow a little contention. In verse 14, Korah says, "Indeed, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, and nor have you given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. Would you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up." And so they've aroused the nation of Israel, the whole congregation, against Moses. In verse 19, it says, Korah assembled all the congregation against Moses and Aaron at the doorway of the tent of meeting. They got everybody together. When Jesus comes into Jerusalem that final time and the crowds are extolling Jesus and coming to him and listening to him, the scribes and the Pharisees stir up the crowds against him to the point, as Sean read this morning, Pilate says, "Well, what do you want me to do with Jesus?" And they say, "Crucify him." because they had been so stirred up against him. Diotrephes wanted to be first, and in doing so he would slander the righteous, and if that didn't work, he put them out. He got rid of them. And John says here in verse 13, don't imitate evil. This man is an evil man. You can tell by his fruit, this is not a good man. Finally, we look at Demetrius. One simple verse about Demetrius in verse 12, it said he's received a good testimony from everyone and from the truth himself. And we add our testimony, and you know that our testimony is true. A threefold testimony. First of all, from everywhere. Demetrius's reputation went ahead of him, and wherever John went, someone would say, do you know Demetrius? He's with the group where Gaius is. I know him. That's a good man. He's a good man. I think of the example in Acts chapter 9 with Tabitha. And when she died and all the people that came and mourned her death because she was a woman with a reputation that everyone knew and appreciated and loved. Demetrius's fruit was his reputation. Tonight we're going to look at Cornelius. And he indeed was also one of these men who had a reputation that people admired and looked up to him for the type of person he was. That's what Demetrius was. John's, it's kind of interesting, John's method of teaching, if you look in the gospel or in the book of Revelation or all three of these letters, John likes to write in sort of a situation like a courtroom scene. And so he presents evidence and he presents witnesses. In the Gospel of John, he would conclude that letter by saying, I have presented these miracles so that you might believe that Jesus is the Son of God. Here, he brings testimony about Demetrius. First, he says, he hears about him from all men. He stands him up against the truth. We talked about that today in our class in Timothy, and Paul writes to Timothy and he says, you will know these men by standing them up against the truth, and so you'll know if the teachings they have are false or not. That's how you measure them, against the truth. Wayne spoke a week and a half ago on Wednesday night about the standard that we're measured up to, and the standard doesn't change. And he says here that Demetrius measures up to the standard. He has a testimony from the truth. And finally, John says, and from me, and from us. Whoever with John, John says, I know this man, and this is a good man, and you can trust him. I was thinking, I don't know why I got to thinking about this, perhaps because I received two insurance notifications in the mail yesterday. But I got to thinking about when we first moved up here, and we started having this group take care of our insurance, and I did that on a recommendation from someone that I trusted. Because we were not from here, and we were just beginning our lives, Kathy and I, and the things that we were going to be doing out on our own. And so someone said, this fella is honest, and you can trust him, and he will take care of those needs that you have. And so for the last 44 years, 42 years, whatever, that we've been with them, they've handled all of our needs in that case. His recommendation turned us to this individual. And that's what John's saying. I recommend Demetrius to you. He is a good man and you can trust him. His fruits bear out what he is. Apple tree and banana tree. I know where they came from because I know what they are. I may not know a person personally. I do not know the apple tree this came from. But I know it makes apples. Looks like pretty good apple. I've had one of its brothers. And I may not know a person personally, But I can know them by knowing about them and knowing what their lives like. And putting that in perspective, people know us because of our actions. And that reflects on God, and that reflects on this congregation. I know in the years working at the factory, and just being in this community, I would have people that would come up to me and say, "Doesn't so-and-so go to church with you?" And I would say, "Yeah, they do." And the person asking me this question is not a godly person. They really have not much interest in religion, but they understand what godly people are supposed to look like. And they said, "That really surprises me, because I know the kind of person you claim to be, and they're really not like that, and you go to church together. That seems like a contradiction." And I'm not saying that to be like Diotrephes here. But people recognize that, and they say, "I see what this person's done, and it doesn't really reflect a godly life." The things that we do in our lives tell people what we're really like. And we need to be very careful with that. I want to go back to the very first point as we draw this lesson to a close. John says, "Gaius, I pray that you prosper with your general well-being and with your health, with your financials, your way of life. I hope that goes as well as your spiritual prosperity, because you are wealthy and you are healthy in your spirit, and I hope the rest of your life reflects that." Would you like for someone to say that about you? Would you like to say for someone to say, "I hope that physically you are as strong as your spirit is"? Some of us should be careful about how we answer that, because we're not very strong spiritually. And would we want that said about our physical life? How does your spiritual prosperity fare? Do you wish to be first? Do you do things so that people will notice you? Or do you do things because someone needs some help? What's the purpose in why you are serving God? How does your reputation reflect your life? Because you certainly have a reputation. All of us do. And what do people say about us when we're not around? Sometimes that might be a little bit scary to know. Jesus speaks about bearing fruit. As long as we're attached to Him, John 15, Jesus says, "I'm the vine and you're the branches. And if you're attached to me, you'll bear fruit, you'll bear good fruit. You will have a good reputation. You will do the things that are right." We see that here in Gaius and Demetrius. They lived the standard that Jesus gave, and they had a good reputation. People knew them. People appreciated them. People honored their lives because of who they were connected to. I would like for us today to think about that, and the fact that how connected to Jesus are we, and do our lives reflect that? Jesus also talks about the penalty of being separated from the vine. And you know how that is. If you've got some flowers or a tree, a bush or something at home, and some of the branches have been broken and are not really connected anymore and they die, and you cut those off and you take them out and you dispose of them, you get rid of them. And that's what Jesus says here. He says, if you're not connected to me, you're going to be cast off and burned up. Who are you connected to? We make the choice. We decide what we want to do. Rick has selected number 335, which is "Live for Jesus," as an invitation song. If you care to turn to that, or if you want to follow off the screen, go ahead and turn there, be thinking about that. But that's what we choose to do. And I would encourage you today to live for Jesus. You'll make a choice who you're gonna live for. And I hope you'll do that. And maybe reflect back here on 3 John and think about, John knew about these people by their fruits, by their reputation, by who they were. What would John say about me if he were writing, to Gaius about Bruce Everett? And what would he have to say? And we make that choice ourselves. We write that script with our own lives. I hope you're writing one that would be one of a testimony of good things that he would write about you. If you need to respond in any way to the gospel, if you've not given your life to Christ and you need to be buried in baptism, repenting of your sins, why, we would ask you to come. And if you've just been, if you've left the place you need to go, all of these individuals we looked at today, the Korah and Dathan and Abiram, Diotrephes, the scribes and Pharisees, these were children of God. These weren't ungodly, immoral people living out in the world. These were children of God who had gotten off track. And there may be some here today that have gotten off track and need to get back where you need to be. If we can help you in any way, won't you come while we stand and sing?